Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there, friend. Vish Khanna talking to you right off the top of the show. A bit unusual. I have an announcement. Like many of my colleagues who are living in Ontario, Canada, under Doug Ford's provincial government, my day job at a campus and community radio station may not exist for much longer. For a sampling of what I'm talking about, please go to your favorite campus and community radio station's website. I'm sure there'll be a little announcement and maybe even a way that you can help them financially or otherwise in this current state of affairs. But because you're listening to this podcast, I wanted to tell you something. I would like nothing more than to keep making episodes of Creative Control every week, but that requires a significant bump in the revenue that this show generates so that I can feed my family and also house them too. I have decided that both food and shelter are important for my family. Call me old-fashioned, this is just how I feel. So I'm looking into subsidies and grants. I'm not having much luck, but I'm looking into those. If you or someone you know wants to help keep the show going, please consider making a monthly flexible donation to my Patreon page, patreon.com/creativecontrol. If you go there, you'll see our current levels do not sustain a guy trying to provide for his wife and his two kids and make a podcast. So maybe a stable day job beckons. But if a stable day job beckons, can I keep doing the show? I don't know. I have no idea. I hope that we can just boost our Patreon pledges and maybe get it to a point where it's sustainable. So thanks if you already donate to the show. If you don't and you can't, that's fine too. But please spread the word as Creative Control's future depends on increased financial support. Again, patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you.
Turn on to problems that upset you. Oh, don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine. And we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by. So forget all about us tonight.
Greg Turkington is a musician and comedian currently based in Los Angeles, California. Though known for playing a surreal version of himself in the On Cinema at the Cinema universe and for roles in TV and films like SpongeBob SquarePants, Ant-Man, and Entertainment, among many others, Turkington is also notably the man behind Neil Hamburger, a harshly hilarious comedian and singer who calls himself America's Funny Man. On January 25th, 2019, Drag City released Hamburger's excellent new big band album, Still Dwelling, which features some wonderful musical arrangements and some very strong singing by Hamburger, who lovingly interprets classic material. Greg and I caught up recently for a talk about his Australian origins, his sentimental and sincere comedy, where Neil Hamburger comes from, his appreciation for all music, and in particular KC and the Sunshine Band, his upcoming new film with Tim Heidecker, why he never does podcasts, the story behind Still Dwelling, and much, much more. with the support of listeners like you who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 466th episode of Creative Control, featuring the dynamic and hilarious Greg Turkington with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Greg. How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How are you?
I'm not bad. I'm not bad, I will say. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Los Angeles.
This is where you've lived for how long exactly?
Oh, about 16 years, 15, 16 years, something like that.
16 years. Okay. And where were you before that?
Before that, just before that, I was in Australia, actually, in Melbourne.
Now, is that, that's where you're from?
Well, it's complicated. And it's weird because people will come up to me because they go on Wikipedia and see that I was born in Australia. And they'll say, yeah, you know, I just saw your show and I heard you slip into the Australian accent, you know, but you do pretty good at hiding it. But the fact is, I've never had an Australian accent because I didn't grow up there. My parents are American and they just, you know, when they were young, they decided to go to Australia and check it out. And they stayed there for a couple years, during which time I was born. But we left when I was maybe 4 or 5 months old. And then later, as an adult, I realized that I had this dual citizenship available to me.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in hand, I thought, why not move to Australia and see how I like it, you know?
Oh, and how was it?
And I loved it and ended up staying there for several years and got married there. And so at this point I do have roots there, but it's not, I mean, I guess I am, you know, half Australian or whatever you want. I mean, I have the passport. I was born there and I have lived there and I'm married to an Australian woman, but those trying to bust me on my accent are barking up the wrong tree, you know?
You sound vaguely in denial about your Australian heritage.
I love it. I mean, I wish I had the accent. It actually kind of sucked because, you know, when Madonna moved to England, she got that accent in like 2 weeks. And I was in Australia for 5 years and I picked up a bunch of the slang, but I don't think it made any difference at all. I kept waiting for that change to happen. You know what I mean?
There's definitely
a rhythm. There's like a rhythm to the way that you speak that I did notice that got altered a bit, you know?
Sure. It's a unique accent. Yeah. It would be it almost feels like you would have to do something deliberate if you don't have that accent to produce that accent.
Well, I think the American accent is just kind of when your real accents start disintegrating.
Yes.
This is sort of the baseline, you know? So it's hard to go in the other direction. But, you know, my wife, you know, she was born and raised in Australia, but her parents are from Sri Lanka. So she grew up with hearing their accent and then had the Australian accent and then has been here for, you know, 15 years. So her accent is something that accent folks should be studying because it's a real mishmash of different input, you know?
Yeah, well, you are a performer. I think you know accents and voices rather well. So I trust your opinion. What do you think? No?
I mean, I definitely have my ears open, but I sure am not. I feel like I'm very inadequate at doing accents and that type of thing.
Do you do any particular impressions? That's usually a litmus test for your vocal cord range. You know what I mean?
I do. It's kind of like it's almost like my singing. It's like if I'm super relaxed, I feel like I can pull off some impersonations, but only then, you know. Sort of like Barney Rubble in the shower on the Flintstones when suddenly he became a decent vocalist. I feel like with the accents I'm like that, but I think it's possible that I might actually just be bad with the impersonations and the accents and just plain bad. Very possible.
I was listening to Still Dwelling a lot. I have been listening to it a lot in anticipation of our talk. Congratulations on this record, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's a very ambitious record, and I have marveled at your voice before. I've marveled at what you do in character as Neil Hamburger and the rhythm.
Well, that's why I talk to you.
Oh, that's the only reason? Because I like you?
Yeah, because you marvel at it.
Appreciate that. No, I do. I do. Thank you. As you know, I'm a fan, and you know, we've spoken many times, a few times in
many.
when you're Neil, and sometimes when you're a version of Greg, I enjoy it all. But what I was going to say is there are moments on Still Dwelling where you're singing, I would say, and this is going to sound maybe ridiculous given the context, but some of your singing here is really remarkable. You are hitting notes. You have a power to your voice that maybe I would surprise some people.
It would if they were willing to listen to it with open ears, because it's bad if you're in any sort of comedic world and you're trying to make music. I feel like it's too easy for people to write the review before even listening to the record sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
And it's really hard to, I mean, definitely this is, it's, I would say it's a comedic record in a lot of ways, but you know, the approach that I was going for when recording the vocal tracks was just trying to get into the songs the way that the vocalists that I admire so much do. And I might not have the skill or the range that they do, but I should be able to tap into the emotions the way that they did. And that's all I wanted to be able to do with this, you know, because when you're singing in character like that it's basically a handicap to have to sing as Neil Hamburger. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And to try to focus in on the songs and what they're about and what they would mean to this character and stuff, and just really get into it that way rather than approaching it as, you know, let's make a bad record. Let's sing poorly. I mean, that was never going to be the option, you know?
Well, you've made some very interesting and bold choices. Like when I think it's the bridge of Everything's All Right, where you're really going for it, and the way you've just chosen to phrase and emphasize lyrics in World Without Love, for example. I mean, there's all manner of examples, but you've just done a thing where I can't. It's a comedy record. I get the impression sometimes that you love a lot of the stuff you're mocking or parodying or satirizing. Is that fair? Is it coming from a place of joy, so to speak? Like, are you honoring it or disparaging it? I'm trying to figure it out.
Most of the songs on this record are songs that I genuinely love. I can't say that Homeward Bound is a song that means very much to me, but Eric, who produced the record, Eric Paparosi, he suggested it, and he was convinced that it would work for Neil Hamburger and it would work in the context of this record, and it was kind of the last thing we did. And because I trusted him so much, you know, I mean, everything that he was doing on the record was blowing my mind. I said, all right, yeah, let's give it a whirl. And it ended up being one of my favorites without feeling any real connection to the song before that, you know. But the others, I mean, they're just like songs I really like that I thought that I might be able to bring something to. And there's certainly lots of songs I really like that I feel very hands-off on, of like, you just don't fuck with that song. It's perfect, you know. Not that these songs weren't perfect, but I felt that there was something I could, I don't want to say add to, but I felt that I had an interpretation up my sleeves for some of these.
Well, listening to your version of Paul Simon's Homeward Bound, it made me, I just, the overwrought aspects of the original song hadn't really occurred to me until I heard Neil Hamburger sing them. Like, that song has just floated by in my life as sort of innocuously. That's just a Paul Simon song, you know, one of his hits. But when Neil Hamburger performs it, it made me reevaluate the sentiment behind that song, and it made me think of your relationship to sentimentality. I kind of asked this question a moment ago in terms of the love that you feel for things when you're mocking them. I mean, on some level, we mock what we love. Is that,
yeah?
Is that, and you have a curious relationship with sentimentality. I think you abhor it on many levels, but I think there's something about it that fascinates you. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think I'm pretty sentimental. I mean, it's strange, but you know, people ask me what my favorite, not a lot of people, but if people ask me what my favorite,
it's mostly me, mostly
time,
me, mostly me asking you the questions.
By
yes.
People, I mean you multiple times. If you know, if we were to talk once every year or two, then I would finally get to answer these questions. One of it is just like, what are my favorite records? And people think they're going to be these really off the wall sorts of, you know, like what's it going to be? And I really like, I think my favorite albums to listen to, honestly, are that get me, that really grip me, are the West Side Story soundtrack, the movie soundtrack,
right,
and Watertown by Frank Sinatra. And these are, I mean, these are very sentimental records, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think I'm kind of a sap with that type of thing. So, it's, but you know, I don't like it when it's poorly done. You know, I can't take like something like the movie E.T. just, even when I was, you know, 14 years old and it came out, I'm just sitting there seething at like, this is garbage. This is it's just schlock. You know, they're using this corny music to sell this corny, stupid story. And I hate it. And I hate everyone in the audience for watching this and liking it and being moved by this trash, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's other people that watched West Side Story and felt that way. I don't know, you know?
There are, you mentioned that people might assume that you might like some off the wall record. You, for those who have followed your work or read about your trajectory, there is some punk rock in there, and you just mentioned seething anger at at E.T. of all things. So I guess I'm curious if you have a sense of where that anger kind of comes from, like, because I've been talking about this with people about, you know, around 14-15 I started to realize that a lot of what was being presented to me might be bullshit, and that's a formative moment when you're like, wait a minute, like that's not true. And that's,
I think you just answered the question. That's exactly it. Is that when I was at that age, I was just super obsessed with art in all its forms. And to see something like that, where I'm like, this isn't art, this is just manipulation and mind control and emotional control. It's the anger. It's just that things could be so good here, you know? Yeah. And this is what you're doing with this. This is what you're doing with your great ability to make a film, is just trying to manipulate us into feeling something rather than just making something where we naturally do feel something. I don't know. I mean, I think I disparage a lot of stuff, as people know, but it comes from just disappointment in a lot of things that are taken, given more credit than they deserve. And then things that are truly special works are marginalized a lot of the time. And you know, it's not just like, oh, I hate cute little creatures like E.T. you know, it's not that at all.
It's the emotional manipulation that they think they can get away with a movie,
yeah,
like,
and that they are getting away with,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I mean, geez, you know, you look at films that win Oscars and things that are celebrated, and a lot of them are kind of in that same boat of just being trash that somebody's figured out a way to manipulate you into thinking that you've had some emotional experience. But that said, I'm not against these popular things. I mean, if I'm talking West Side Story, and you know, my favorite, the music that I really listen to the most are basically some of the most popular recordings of all time. So it's I'm not like a snob saying you got to listen to this weird record where finally somebody tapped into something.
Yeah,
I mean, I get goosebumps from listening to, you know, certain Supremes records. So, you know, I'm certainly up for it, you know.
I think it's there. When I watch you as Greg on cinema, and when I see Neil Hamburger sometimes, well, Neil is a bit less. I was going to say I can feel the kind of sentiment and the feeling towards the things you're sort of mocking more with the On Cinema universe and what that version of Greg does. But Neil is a very interesting character. This is a very earnest release, Still Dwelling, by Neil on some level. There's not a song about a recycling bin, per se.
Right.
Some of the work you've done in the past. Where does Neil come from exactly? I'm sure you've been asked this before. I'm sure you've spoken to it perhaps. But I'm just curious when we get into this sort of meta mockery, what's going on this album in terms of what... like I said earlier, I'm trying to deduce what you're mocking, the song, the sentiment, what have you. But Neil as a character, as a figure, is complicated. He seems to be mocking comedy. He's embittered about comedy. He's doing comedy. and so I wonder about your perspective on what Neil is, where he came from, and what he's doing out here in the world.
Well, I mean, I think that was 7 or 8 questions all rolled up into one.
That's what journalism is now.
I guess so. And then that gives the people the ability to answer just one of them.
Yes, exactly.
And then,
yes.
And then move on.
Yes.
It seems like they answered you.
now you're mocking me, which I appreciate. The basis of the question is, why Neil? Where does he come from? What is going on? That's 3 questions. I reduced it to 3. See what I did? I took it. I narrowed it down.
I know, but it's still not narrow enough. But I'm gonna try.
Thank you.
Well, you know, the whole thing started out as one thing. I think I mean Neil Hamburger started out as a character in a prank phone call, which the prank phone call wasn't made to be recorded and released. It was just literally me screwing around and making a prank call that someone happened to record. That then we did release into the world, and then people liked the character and wanted more. And so I sat down to make more prank calls as this character. And then I thought, I'd like to explore more of this character, which, you know, at that point, this character, there wasn't much to. It was just a jerk on the phone prank calling people. But I kind of thought, rather than make more prank calls this way, I'd like to look at this guy from a different aspect and record what his actual comedy would be like, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of opened the door to just exploring the same character from different angles throughout the years. And of course, at some time, there were certain points where there was stuff that I was personally interested in that maybe I could figure out, or, you know, whether consciously or subconsciously, how to shoehorn those interests into what was going on with this character, especially when it turned into an actual stage show.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, there were, you know, at least 5 years and multiple records, several albums worth of Neil Hamburger before it was a live entity, you know?
Yeah.
And then once you open that can of worms, it just gets into, and if you're doing something for as long as I've been doing this, I mean, it could be quite boring if it just is a one-dimensional thing. And I kind of made my point about some of the things that I was going after initially with that character. And so then it kind of just gets bigger and bigger and goes into different territories, as well as, I mean, I just have inhabited it for so long that, you know, it starts becoming fleshed out to the way that a real person is fleshed out, you know?
Yeah.
And if you look at what somebody, a real person does over 25 years, there's going to be a lot of variety and range and change, hopefully, to their perspectives and their experiences over that time, you know? So it was never something that I sat there in front of the computer and said, all right, let's figure out what he would do about this, and let's figure out this angle, and where is he coming from with this? It was more just in inhabiting it and inhabiting it for that long, and then having my own different viewpoints about different things. They kind of got folded into it, you know?
Yeah. This record, Still Dwelling, occupies this realm. I suppose, is Big Band an accurate descriptor of?
I think it is. Yeah. Although I saw this review, somebody said chamber pop, and I kind of
chamber
thought
pop.
That was nice. Yeah, I thought that was perhaps relevant. I mean, we were, you know, I think we were really under. Me and Eric were really heavily under the influence of Watertown, and you know, I just wanted to. I don't know. I kind of like when, and especially because I've made so many records and over the years, and of course we had a feature film and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the challenge of doing stuff. Sometimes it isn't a commentary on anything, but it's just, let's just try to make something beautiful. You know, let's just try to do something that's that's just nice. That, you know. That,
but that's what's going on with the reception of this record. I don't think people get it.
No. But kinda,
do you see?
I knew that.
Do you kind of see why? I mean, it's difficult
yeah,
for
of
you
course.
To. Yeah. This is.
Did Leonard Nimoy expect when he made his records? I mean, those are like sincere attempts by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
To, you know, to sing and to have some sort of emotional moment with these songs, you know, and it's hard not to listen to them and say, well, man, Nimoy's not the best singer, and this is ludicrous, you know? This is just ridiculous. When Spock is singing, I'd love making love to you, you know, it's just fucked, you know?
Yeah.
and I get it, and I'm, you know, but, and he probably got it too, you know? And, but, you know, like, I love the Richard Harris records. To me, those are, like, some of the pinnacles of culture, is with the Richard Harris-Jimmy Webb collaboration, and you know, Richard Harris is, I think, a great singer, but you read any review of those records, and it's always like, Richard Harris is an actor, he's a terrible singer, but I think he's a great singer who really goes for it, you know? And but he brings this sort of actor's approach to these songs, and the same with, like, the William Shatner.
Yeah.
Initially, it's like, you get these actors, they're kind of bringing this weird other approach to singing into it, you know.
Yes.
It's like a real performance, and sometimes it ends up being ridiculous, as with some of the Shatner stuff, you know, and other times I don't think it's ridiculous at all. It's just, they're just intense interpretations of the songs, like with the Richard Harris doing the Jimmy Webb, you know. I don't see the problem there, but I do see why some people would, you know, if they, I mean, a lot of people will talk crap about something like a Richard Harris record, and then if I were to ask, like, well, what is it that you find that is the, you know, sincere, powerful, emotional vocal performance, and then they'll give me an answer that just is like, okay, well, we're done here, you know, because I don't know. We're not on the same page here at all.
That's fine. It seems to me that you're talking about the. It's a tension between sincerity and comedy that people have to kind of separate for some reason. Like this record, Still Dwelling, it is a comedy album, but like mm-hmm. you've been saying, it is a sincere sort of product. It's sincere on one level, but as we've discussed, like some of the singing, some of the phrasing choices, they're funny. And there's mm-hmm. this weird distinction that people always want to make between sincerity and comedy. And they separate. It's like the Oscars do. Like they don't have any respect for comedy, you know? Everyone's mm-hmm. got to be earnest and sincere. But I feel like that's maybe why, that's what people aren't getting about Neil Hamburger in this iteration, I think. They can't separate the two. Or they need to separate the two, but they can't figure out how.
And it's frustrating because I think there's lots of comedy in the best dramatic works. For instance, I mean, one of my absolute heroes in the world is Leonard Cohen. And I find there is so much humor in his lyrics that is just high quality, top of the line comedy.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it's weird because people barely notice that, you know, and they don't seem to understand that, you know, that type of humor, deep humor on these things makes the same point as the serious lines do, and that they are serious lines. when Leonard Cohen's being funny, it's real serious.
It's,
you know?
It's fascinating that people took, I thought the same thing about his last album, You Want It Darker. Like, he's addressing his mortality and the end of life in a very sincere way. But if you actually listen to what he's saying, he's very good humored about it. Like he's
even the title.
Exactly.
Even the title of the record is funny.
It is. You know? Yeah, it is. But I don't know. I don't know if we need a radical reprogramming or why we process things this way or why some of us anyway feel like there needs to be this delineation between the two. But I, now that you mention it, I can see why, how you straddle these realms and are, I guess, sort of trying to bring them together.
I mean, I guess I am in my own stuff for sure. It's the stuff that I don't know, the films and the records and things that hit me the hardest, like the Cohen or like Phil Oakes is another example of a songwriter who's very serious, but there's just humor in everything, even in the most serious songs, you know, and it's good quality humor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't understand why people don't see this. And I don't understand why if they're going to like, say like the stuff Tim Heidecker does, which like his musical records are beautiful records and they're very serious, but I mean, he's a funny guy and that's coming through in these lyrics. I mean, in the same way, like Randy Newman is another one.
Warren Zevon, like these kinds of guys.
Warren Zevon. Yeah. Yeah. And it's weird though. People will take it from those guys going, I guess some people might think backwards into a humor direction, but the humor going into the serious direction doesn't seem to make sense to people. And
you've hit upon it there. I think you've hit upon it, Greg. I think people are mm-hmm. willing to accept the serious person going funny, but not the other way around.
Yeah, even though it might be like the serious person might be the so-called serious person might be 60% serious, 40% funny, and the funny person might be 60% funny, 40% serious. And to these people, they're completely on different pages.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
It is weird.
And bad. And bad.
It's frustrating. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, like the film that Rick Alverson and I did, Entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's a grim view for some people. But to us, it was very funny. And we would shoot some of those scenes that were just the bleakest scenes in the movie. And the second that he said cut, we would just turn to each other and just burst into convulsive laughter. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. We thought it was both of those things, very funny and very serious. And I think they're really tied together because so much of, you know, laughter is a way to process these serious issues.
I don't want to tear us apart. Yeah, I don't want
to
sound like a fortune cookie, but that's what life is. It's serious
Thank
and funny.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the dynamic of life that I thought those days of sort of, you know, segregating our feelings was gone and processing art that way was gone. But it sort of seems to be stronger than ever.
Worse than ever. Yeah.
Worse than ever. Yeah.
I mean, and also like I noticed this in preparation for this record coming out and people, you know, saying, oh, it's a novelty record or, you know, whatever, this is so bad, it's good, this kind of thing. It's like, if you watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder, and he sings like Pure Imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that voice is not, nobody was asking him to make pop records after that. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But it's the absolute right voice for that material, for those Anthony Newley songs, like that he really nails those songs, and it's an emotional experience listening to that. Or you listen to like Ray Bolger and Burt Lahr and Jack Haley and the Wizard of Oz singing those songs. Like, I mean, those are character voices. Those guys are character actors, you know, they're like vaudeville guys that had these kind of peculiar voices, and those songs are all like, they're heavy hitters, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no.
They really are.
They are. I asked you about the big band sound here because I just wanted to highlight the fact that, to my recollection, Neil Hamburger has occupied different sort of genre realms. Can mm-hmm. you, for people who haven't heard them, what are some of the musical genres that, if you will, that Neil has sort of explored in his work?
Well, I mean, we did a country record, which, yeah.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I was so lucky to be working with these great musicians that could, they knew that sound, you know. Dave Gleason, who played guitar and on that record and wrote a bunch of the songs with me, he's a country guy, you know, that's what he plays, and he knows this stuff, and we didn't want to have that. I don't know, there's a certain thing where people that don't really love, truly love great country music, kind of think of it as like, let's do one of these funny country records,
right,
and talk in a funny country voice, or, you know, hillbilly, ha ha ha. Like, no, we were like listening to specific sounds, mostly from Bakersfield from late 60s, and trying to get this kind of emotional punch that those records had for us, you know what I mean? So anyway, yeah, I mean, I can see why it might not be taken as a credible country record by some people, but it's certainly not a like wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of record either. We did do, because the guys, you know, Adam and Adam Ellis and Dave Gleason and Prairie Prince that I did that record and the next one with, they're just like incredible, versatile musicians. We did like a song that was basically me saying, I really love Casey and the Sunshine Band. I think these guys right. are really underrated. Really, really underrated is like this true multicultural band that, you know, it's like, okay, people think it's just like this disco thing, but these guys were from Miami and they had these guys from Cuba and they had African-American musicians, and it was really like a true melting pot, and everybody was at the absolute top level
of
talent. And I think their records are really, really pretty incredible. And I love the simplicity of the lyrics. They're, I mean, almost like somebody's got brain damage, you know, these lyrics that they have, just really repetitious and singular in theme. And I don't know, I find the lyrics kind of funny in that way, but the music's incredible. And so I went to these guys, to Prairie and Dave and Adam, and I was like, let's see if we can do a Casey and the Sunshine Band song, you know, and try to write something. Except I gave them the my wife had written a negative review of these trash bags that we bought at Costco that were just a torment, because, as you know, Costco, it's like you got everything's in huge containers.
Get 50 of the thing that you wanted one of, maybe.
Yeah. And I think we bought these trash bags and that were 200 in the box, and from the first bag it's like, oh god, these are awful. And now it's going to be years, it's going to be a decade till we go through these. And we were just so pissed off about it. And it was too big of an investment, and you don't want to ruin the environment by throwing 200 trash bags or 199 trash bags just into the trash without using them. And just to relieve the household tension over this issue, she went on Amazon and wrote this review of these trash bags. And I was reading it and thought it would work as lyrics to a song, and particularly to this Casey and the Sunshine Band song that we were trying to cook up. And voila, you know, we've got this.
That's funny.
I guess you call it a soul disco song, you know.
Does the do American Costco's not have a good return policy? The Canadian Costco's, you can take anything back, the receipt.
I don't know. I mean, I can't. I just hate returning things. I feel like it's really there's something to. I can't take it. I feel like I'm begging for money on the streets, even though, you know, these policies are usually fine. I just like going in and say, like, excuse me, would you take this back? It's not, I don't want this. I don't know. I just can't, I can't do it. I'd rather figure out a way to dispose of the stuff anonymously, you know, or put it on eBay. I should have just put the, I'm happy to do that. I could have sold, you know, 199 crummy trash bags.
Yeah. Something telling happened a moment ago when you said Casey and the Sunshine Band. You and I both chuckled. And I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. That's a funny name. It's hard to take a band called Casey and the Sunshine Band seriously. You were just saying, like, no one takes them seriously. They're called Casey and the Sunshine Band. Like, that's
true.
That's hard to take. That's what it is. I think it goes back to what we were saying about how people perceive things in terms of, well, that can't be serious. They're called Casey and the Sunshine Band.
I think, like, when you name your band or when you name whatever it is you're doing, you really, that, like, that's probably the most important decision you've got going, you know?
Yeah.
There's certainly, like, singer-songwriters who just have serious names that I think are taken seriously.
Exactly.
And shouldn't be. You know?
Exactly. I think,
but
that's
when you're naming your kid. Do you have a kid?
I have two kids. Yeah, we talked about this. I have two children. You have how many do you have now?
I got one.
You got one. Yeah. And the last time I saw you, I showed you a video on my phone.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember this.
Of my I think it was my daughter tobogganing. She's younger, and you were like, "Oh no. That doesn't, you seemed concerned." And I was like, "No, Greg, she was fine. She's a kid. She was, you seemed like, you know what I mean? You were like, I don't think you should let your kid do that."
Well, that wasn't my call to make, was it? I'm sorry.
No, I remember it. Obviously, it stuck with me, and I think it speaks to your character. I was very touched that you were concerned about a child you were watching on a little phone. You've never even met the child, and you were worried about them. And yes, I guess the subtext is you were questioning my parents, or parenting, rather.
Yeah.
But
Now I...
No, I have two kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Okay. Well, you know, when you name the kids, you've got to really think about what this is projecting, you know?
And that's interesting. I went with Levon and Ramona. Mm-hmm.
Those are great, great, great names.
Oh, thanks.
They're not trivial names, you know? You don't want that.
It's true.
You don't want somebody, you know, you don't want your little girl not to be taken seriously as a woman because people just think, oh Pixie, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's stupid, but it you know, it's just like people's appearances. Like, people are judging somebody instantly by how they look, and it's not right, but that's what we're dealing with. And anyway, Casey and the Sunshine Band, you know, they kind of blew it, didn't they?
Well, I tell you, we both chuckled. We just, as you said, that even you in sort of saying they're not taken seriously, just chuckled saying their name. So I just wanted to highlight that there's something there. I'll write a master's thesis on it someday.
I mean, they were a party band, so I don't think they were. I don't think that they needed to be taken seriously in a certain sense, but I just think that they should be given more respect as fine musicians and as trailblazers.
Yeah. No,
there's certainly nothing. There's no serious message to be gotten out of the music. But if you just want like a good quality soul funk disco type band, like, I prefer. Honestly, I prefer Casey and the Sunshine Band to, like, James Brown records, you know?
Yeah.
I like them better.
Interesting.
And so, you know, whatever. Maybe I'm nuts, but I think that the guitarist in that band is like one of the, Jerome Smith is like one of the greatest guitarists who ever lived, and gets really, really unique sounds. And the poor guy, you know, he ended up killed on a construction site doing construction, you know, after he left the band. And it's strange, because you get these people that are great musicians that sort of, sometimes they have good publicists, sometimes they have a certain type of drive in them, who knows? And they, you know, get asked to do things and taken seriously and have great careers. And then you get somebody who, you know, maybe it was impossible in 1982 or whenever he left Casey and the Sunshine Band. Maybe nobody, maybe that wasn't a good calling card. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the climate was, but whatever the case, the guy, to my way of thinking, shouldn't have been working construction.
Yeah. Know? No, I hear you. No. And I'll check him out. I'll dig in. I didn't really think like I was saying, you know, I think I wrote him off a bit for their, I know the songs, some of the songs, but I'll dig in now. Thank you. I mean, thank you. You're going to have me looking up Casey and the Sunshine Band.
It's so. the first three albums are incredible albums and really innovative. And like the guys, Rick Finch and Harry Casey that started it were like record nerds that were like working in the warehouse at a record distributor. And they're like teenagers that were obsessed with records and music. And then they started, there was like a primitive studio in the back of this record distributor. And they started screwing around and like doing this stuff themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And I think like Rock Your Boat by George McRae was maybe one of the first things they did that it's really fascinating, just the recording techniques. I think there, if you look it up and you find interviews with these guys on how that record was made, I mean, it's like really, it's like reading interviews with like lo-fi musicians that were, you know, using cardboard boxes for drums and this kind of thing. Like these guys really, I think were great.
Cool.
Great. Yeah. Brilliant producers. And then they brought in all these local, basically session musicians from the Miami area and put together this thing. And whatever. There you go. You screwed up.
I did.
Tried to interview me, and you end up with like this Casey and the Sunshine Band talk. And
well, that's my fault. I asked too many questions at the same time. We've already established that this is all. It's all my fault. I got what I deserved. We've talked about a few of the songs in Still Dwelling. I don't. Do you have like an overarching thing you want to say to kind of conclude our thoughts about this record? I mean, I've hinted at a couple of the things like Paul Simon we talked about. I didn't mention Paul McCartney and Wings. I didn't mention John Lennon. Is there a TSOL song on this?
TSOL, yeah, there sure is.
Yeah, so you've got, about the selection in terms of some of this we've established is, most of it, it sounds like, is coming from an earnest appreciation of this music, and some of it I think you maybe saw some potential for humor, but is there anything else you want to say about of this record and some of the songs you chose?
And also Mark Eitzel, who to me is like a Leonard Cohen quality type of songwriter, and also very, 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 very funny in these songs that are, you know, as they say, as serious as a heart attack, but I always think there's this undercurrent of great humor in them. I'll just say this, it was an interesting project in that it wasn't even my idea. It was Eric's idea. He had he's just a brilliant musician. He plays with Cat Power, and he plays actually with Denny Lane doing Wings songs. That, you know, Denny's got a great show where he's just doing the Wings catalog with this incredible band that he's put together, and Eric is in that band. But Eric would, like, sometimes at Neil Hamburger shows, we would do this kind of duo thing where we'd open the show, he'd be on guitar and I'd be on vocals, and we'd do a couple of songs sort of in this Sinatra Hobeem style.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'd do a couple songs to open the show or one song, and then I'd do the 45-minute comedy set, and then he'd come out and we'd close with a couple of songs. And we've been doing this for a while, and I always like starting a comedy show with a song, you know. Much like Jerry Lewis would often do. And it's a vaudeville sort of tradition. But we were doing this, and we went to see The Who, a group that we both love. They were playing in Las Vegas. And so Eric and I decided to go see the show and, you know, to cover the costs, book a Neil Hamburger show in Vegas for the night before.
Oh, okay.
And while we were planning his trip out, he told me that he knew of this recording studio there that were friends of his and that was cheap and sounded great. And why didn't we just go and document the songs that we had been doing live just to have them on tape, you know, just for the hell of it. And so we went in there, and I think at this point there were maybe 8 songs that we rotated with as this duo, and we just knocked them out, you know, in a couple hours, just recorded them live, guitar vocals, got a nice sounding recording, came back from Vegas, and I basically forgot about these tapes, forgot that we had done this, you know, it was fine, they were fine, but there was no plan to do anything with them. And then Eric, bless his heart, unbeknownst to me, as a surprise, took a couple of these recordings and started layering all these multiple tracks of music on them, him playing all these instruments, including drums, which, you know, you should never be recording the drums after the song is is locked in. But he did that and put in, you know, string arrangements and all this stuff, and just presented them and said, check this out. Look what I did. Surprise, you know.
Wow. And
I was blown away at how good this stuff was. I think the Straight Life was one of the first of these, and it was just beautiful in the way of the exact music that him and I really take to, these 60s pop productions, you know. And so we kind of said, let's keep going. Let's do more of this. And he went ahead and filled in music on the stuff we'd recorded in Vegas. But then we started writing songs and bringing in new songs. And then he kind of started thinking, well, I can play all these instruments, but we might get a different take if we bring in this guy or bring in that guy.
Yeah.
And I think the real turning point was when we brought in Rabbit Bundrick, who is like truly, truly, truly one of the great genius musicians of all time. He played keyboards with The Who and with Pete Townsend for 30 years. But before that, I mean, he had been brought in by Bob Marley and the Wailers to play on those records. And he's, I mean, the guy's played with everyone from like ABBA and, you know, Mick Jagger. And he was in Free. Just this incredible career. And really, his playing on Pete Townsend's album, Empty Glass, is always just blown my mind. Just very innovative keyboard playing. And he had played most of the music for the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack. So, you know, he had a sense of humor, and we had a contact with him and asked him if he would play on a track. And we just needed a piano track, and he sent back, I think, 11 different tracks of different instruments that,
wow,
you know, the synthesized instruments. But it was so crazy. Just it was stuff that no one would ever anticipate. Like, we thought we had this track kind of done, and then he sent back this thing that just absolutely blew our mind, just his approach to these things. And it's weird, because in reading Pete Townsend's autobiography, he kind of says the same thing about Rabbit, that like, it feels like somebody from another planet almost. He's just approaching these things from a way that you would never, ever think to do. And we were so happy with that we started, you know, all right, can you do more tracks? And then that kind of opened the floodgate to other guest people that might improve upon what we had. And Eric brought in this guy, Proben Gregory, who plays in Brian Wilson's band.
Oh.
And he came in with his horns, and, you know, I think, I'm surprised he didn't need to go to the hospital after he was done, because he laid down trumpet and trombone and flugelhorn, and just, you know, he was worked very hard. But anyway, we got all these guys, and before you knew it, and Petra Hayden came in and did strings, and oh, Tanya, nice, Hayden, and we just like kind of piecemeal worked on this thing for the course of a year, and then there it was.
Well, like I said earlier, and I hope this resonates with you, I think the record's beautiful. Like on every level, on a sincere, sentimental level, on a comedic level, it's just very thoughtful. And as I said, maybe at the beginning of all this, your singing is excellent. I mean, in character, to sing the way you sing, to hold these notes, all that kind of stuff, it's very good. So I hope that resonates with you on some level.
Well, I mean, that's what I aspire to, and I like singing so much, you know, listening to singing. And I always feel very unqualified. But when we were doing it, I was really trying to get what I wanted it to be. I was really, you know, trying to tap into something. And having Eric there, who has just got a perfect ear, he was very encouraging. And it was like, you nailed it. That's perfect. You know, it definitely gave me some confidence to go for it.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. No, that comes across. So, as we wrap up here, what's next for Greg Turkington? What's next for Neil Hamburger? What's going on?
Oh dear. Well, hopefully no more podcasts. You know, I have a no podcast policy.
Yes. It's been difficult to get you on this show as yourself.
I know, but I would do anything for you because I always love, I love your interviewing. I love your writing. I just think you're just the best at this stuff. And so,
geez, Greg,
you know, well, when Catherine was like, oh, you do this podcast, I was like, no. And then she said who it was. And I was like, oh yes. I will.
That's very kind of you. Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
I mean, I it just worries me that, you know, because then if I do one, then other people will think that I do podcasts that I don't want to do them. I really don't, but I love talking. I mean, I always love, you just ask the best questions for getting interesting discussions going rather than, you know, the usual canned answers.
Well, the trick is to ask as many questions as possible in one go. That's what I do. I just
I think it works.
I don't have any. I have no. I'm not. This is not a brag or a boast. And it's sometimes it doesn't work out. But I have no notes, right? I'm just listening to you and processing and talking to you like a normal human, like if we were meeting up somewhere, you know. So when I'm stumbling about for a thing to say or a question, it's me formulating it as a human being who's done some research, has some thoughts, and is just accessing them in the moment. So,
which should be what improvisational acting in comedy is. You know?
Yes, I suppose it harkens back to that. I just want to be listening actively and in the moment. So I've just stopped. You know, it's when you start out with something, I'm sure you're the same. You have your crutches that you bring with you. Maybe they're on stage, maybe it's a notepad, maybe it's whatever, but at some point I've discovered, like, yeah, no, you're okay, trust yourself. And, like, you know, you say kind things, I hear kind things, and that is flattering and it's encouraging. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, seriously, it does not go unappreciated.
Oh,
I can
thank you.
Say that much. And I'm sure your listeners and your readers are also very, very, very thankful that you're out there doing this. And
I appreciate that.
Get you know, because I don't know. I tend to feel that artists, you know, if you want to know what they're about, just listen to the art. You know, I mean, people say this, but I think it's really true that maybe we don't have the best way to express what we're doing by talking about it. The truest expression of what we're trying to communicate is in what we've communicated in the art. That's what we're, you know what I mean? So to me, talking about this stuff, I generally feel bad, like, oh boy, you're selling the stuff short, and who cares what I have to say about it? I said what I had to say about it in the actual thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I wrestle with that too in asking questions sometimes, like,
but you make it work though, because you actually are able to elicit, in your interview subjects, you're able to, make people talk about things in a way that actually adds to the art that they do rather than subtracts from it, which is a problem with some interviews that I listen to where I'm like, oh shoot, this is just like almost ruining the art for me, because I feel like this person even doesn't feel this way about this, but because this interviewer is so poor, they're giving these answers almost based on what they think the interviewer wants to hear, and it's actually destructive. Anyway, you're the opposite of those types of people, and so I appreciate it.
Thank you. What was my question? Oh yeah, what's coming up next?
Know.
No podcasts. You're not doing podcasts.
No.
Any other plans to share or news, so to speak?
Well, we're doing these On Cinema live tours, which are really fun.
Cool.
We've got maybe a dozen more shows booked around the U.S. Unfortunately, not Canada.
Oh, okay.
And then I've got a bunch of shows this summer in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, good.
And, and England as well. And then Tim and I did this feature film that it's supposed to be a short thing for the web for AdultSwim.com. And we just ended up kind of with Eric Natornicola, who's our director and writes these things with us. We ended up accidentally making a feature film in the the Decoron Cinema universe,
right?
About Tim running for district attorney of San Bernardino and sort of this pathetic campaign that he's running. And you know, we shot in San Bernardino, and it's some of it we shot on the streets, some of it's scripted with actors, and but you know, we did this thing, and it's looks like it's getting some actual distribution and hopefully some sort of theatrical run. So
oh, amazing.
That's coming up later in this year, and I think Tim's acting in it is just mind-blowing, following up on the incredible performance he gave in the trial that we did. And I think people will find this enjoyable. It's somewhere between I would say somewhere between like Christopher Guest type movie and Rick Alverson type movie.
Okay.
Some sort of weird deep parody of a certain culture, but like very, very bleak.
I'm sorry, did you give the title of the film?
Or
is it a working title?
It's called at least at this point it's called Mr. America.
Okay.
It's the title's changed a few times.
Right.
But
okay.
I just wanted
to make sure I didn't miss that. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, and so we'll see when that comes out.
Okay, great. And if for people who want to monitor your comings and goings on the internet or social media, do you want to shout out where they can do that?
I would suggest they go to a park instead. And aren't they on the social media and computer enough doing their banking and everything else?
Yeah, like, yeah. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, just let people know if they want to keep track of all the things you just said.
I don't know.
It's fine.
I mean, they can look for me on the street.
Okay. Okay. Is there a song from Still Dwelling that we can go out on? Can you select a song for us?
Wow. I guess why don't we go out on Lonely, the Mark Eitzel cover that we did on there.
Is there any particular reason that stuck out for you?
Well, because I was on the spot and had to name something.
Oh, I see.
I think Eric really like outdid himself on that arrangement. It really has like a Jimmy Webb vibe to me. Like, and that's got some nice Proben Gregory horns on that. And yeah, I dig it. But you know what? If you want, play a different track and delete what I just said. I'm fine with anything from the album being played. Really.
No, Lonely is a great way to go. This is Lonely from Still Dwelling by Neil Hamburger. This album out on Drag City. We didn't even mention that.
And that you could buy it at dragcity.com.
There you go. You promoted the internet. Good job.
You don't have to buy it on the street from the sidewalk from me. And anywhere that find cassette tapes.
Yes.
And CD compact discs and LP long playing records. It's in every and the digital thing too, if that's your bag.
Yeah. All right, here it is. Lonely, Neil Hamburger from Still Dwelling. Greg, thank you so much for your time and your kind words and your attention, and I appreciate it, and best of luck with everything.
Well, just what you said, I'm saying it right back at you, because I really appreciate your interest in my stuff over the years and your kind words. So what a nice way to end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You just want me to shut up. You don't want me to think what I'm thinking, or the devil in my throat to come up. And you get so nervous that everything's a joke. If I have to be this lonely,
if I have to be this lonely, if I have to be this lonely, if I have to be this lonely, I may as well be alone. So I go back to my room by the freeway, fall onto my bed like snow, like the cold, I never woke you, and I kill her. If I have to be this lonely, 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 I may as well be alone. When you wake up in the morning, you won't remember that anyone was here. Oh, your life is so rewarding, and you are the grand prize, my
it's a real honor. It's a rare podcast appearance by Greg Turkington. Thank you very much, Greg, for being on this, the 466th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One Podcast Network and available on all iOS and Android platforms, and also on Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, these sorts of things. If you're looking for an episode and you can't find it on any of those things for some reason, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Vish Creative, or follow me directly at Vish Khanna. You can also listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at CFRU.ca or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. Or as Greg says, you could just skip all of those things and just go to the park. Just go to the park and forget the internet. But if you're going to be on the internet, maybe go to some of those things that I just said. Thanks again to CFRU, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, and Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support of this show. Also, my dear pal Jim Guthrie lets me use a song of his every week. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And last but not least, thank you. Thank you very much for listening to this show and all the support you've shown for it and for, you know, telling your friends about it and subscribing to it. That's great. Thank you. And that's all I have to say for now. I will talk to you very, very soon, I hope. Goodbye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.